Hey everyone, welcome back to Seeking What They Sought, and I am here with Anthony, as usual, and our special guest today is Judell McCormick. And Judell is someone we've known for a long time. By the way, Jesse and Eric are not here. They're jerks. Yeah, I was really tempted to say something really mean about them, but I'm not going to stoop to their level today.
Well, Judell just said losers.
I just said losers. Yeah,
I missed that. I was too busy being nice. But I will let Judell say that. Obviously, you can tell that Judell knows Jesse and Eric well. And the reason for that is we went to college together at Walla Walla University, the land of the onions, home of the brave. That's their official slogan there in Walla Walla, right? Home of the onions.
I forgot about that.
Something like
it's
that.
It's so good you Anthony, say it that, twice. I think Anthony, they say that. Yeah.
Anthony, that's a lie. You just said forgot about that. Like you thought that was a real thing. And I just made that up on the spot.
Oh, okay. I was like, I don't know what that is, but I guess it's real. I trusted you, Sean.
You should not.
You're so trustworthy.
That was your first mistake. But Jesse and Eric couldn't make it. We'll see if Jesse can a little bit later. But for now, it's going to be Anthony and Judell. But Judell worked with us at Walla Walla. Forming a student-led church. We actually did an episode on it a few years ago talking about Circle Church, which is actually still going on there at Walla Walla University, which is really cool. It's kind of crazy that it's been going on for so long, well over a decade at this point, which
weird.
Makes me feel really old.
Yeah.
Really old. And Judell, you were there at the beginning. Yeah. You got to know us. And at that point, I think when you came on the team, was Shelby there already, or is it just you as the lone girl on the team? I'm trying to remember.
Was Shelby there at that point?
Yeah. Shelby was there.
Yeah.
But it was just you two.
Thankfully.
And then this group of, oh, and who?
Oh, I just said thankfully she was there. Yeah.
Oh, thankfully. Otherwise, yeah. No, but, well, I know the rest of us, it was just the group of these idiots that like, I don't know if Circle Church would have survived without the counterbalance of, you two, Shelby and Judell, because we were too stupid. We were. I mean, we're still bad, but if any of you that have listened to us long enough, if you think we're dumb now, imagine college and it's about 25
imagine
times worse.
19-year-old this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot worse.
It's
so
fine. You guys were like the visionaries and we like, you know, kept you grounded. So it's fine. It's a good balance.
That is a really nice way.
That's the nicest diplomatic.
That is a very principal answer. And I should say that because Judell is a principal. You are a principal at an Avenas school. Mm-hmm. Paulsbo Avenas School, to be specific. You're located in the Pacific Northwest where we all grew up and loved. And Judell, that's kind of wild to me that, you know, we were all just
crazy,
you know, students together. And now we're all just doing stuff like pastors, teachers, principals.
We're the old
adults our lives
that we looked up to when we were in like high school. Judell, that's you. You're a literal principal. That's crazy. How does it feel?
It is crazy. I can't believe it sometimes. It's a lot of responsibility, but it's it's good. It feels like a good place to be right now. It's a good way to make a difference, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. We'll talk about that. I'm going into my 10th year of teaching and I've been doing junior high. I've talked about that a bit. Just the craziness of teacher life, you know, and Judell, I'm trying to remember if we took any education classes together at Walla Walla. I know that you graduated 2016. Is that right? Or 2017? Which year did you graduate Walla Walla?
So I didn't do education, actually. I was biology, pre-med.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
So that's why we didn't do any education classes together.
Okay, okay.
I was 2015 was undergrad, and then I did my master's in 2017.
Nice. Gotcha. Okay. Man, I forgot about why we didn't overlap in any of those classes together, but that's really interesting. So actually, that brings me up to a point. I want to hear your journey a bit. You also, where did you grow up, Judell? Like as a kid, before you came to Walla Walla, before we met you, like where did you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up on a little island called Ponape. And a lot of people in the Adventist world know Ponape because we send a lot of student missionaries to Ponape.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not Ponapean by birth. I'm actually Sri Lankan, but my parents are missionaries to Ponet Bay, long-term missionaries. So being a missionary kid, I was taught by missionaries my whole life, and it was Adventist education.
Yeah.
K through 12, with the exception of a couple years in India. But yeah, it was mostly, you know, college students from Walla Walla that were my teachers, K through 12. So that's honestly kind of how I ended up at Walla Walla University, because a lot of my teachers were from Walla Walla.
That's such a unique experience of being in a missionary setting like that. And you know, like I remember how, you know, Anthony, there were hundreds from Walla Walla that would go out and take a year off, including my wife. You know, she went to Yap in Micronesia and had a similar experience where she was a college kid being the teacher, right? And that kind of out of body experience. Yeah. But you had it in reverse where those were your teachers. Did you consciously think about that? Like, this is not, I mean, that was your normal, was to have Walla Walla kids being your teachers. Did that feel normal? Did that feel, you know, did that feel weird, or was it just, it was normal? It was just what you expected because that's what you grew up with.
I think when I was younger, it was just kind of like, this is it. This is my life. But I think as I was got older in high school, they were, you know, they were pretty close in age to us in high school. It was kind of weird being taught by people that were only a few years older than you. And I remember feeling kind of the gravity of the situation, feeling, wow, these people gave up a year of their life to come teach us. And I thought that was really special. So I, you know, actually always wanted to be a missionary, a student missionary, but I never got the chance to. But I can share more of how my current school actually kind of helps in that area, which is nice, helps that dream a little bit for me.
Did you ever, for sure. Having experienced college and having been a college student and having known how much college students were just like figuring it out, right, when we're in that stage of life, a lot of times we have no idea what we're doing. We're just flying by the seat of our pants. Did you, looking back, are you ever just like, did I get a subpar education? Because
I didn't learn squat for 12 years. That's what Anthony's asking.
I'm not saying you didn't. I'm wondering, did you ever feel that way?
It's interesting. I think it depends on the teacher. And I think I was really blessed to have a lot of student missionaries who were there, who really wanted to make a difference and who took it seriously. But my dad worked for the school, and he, you know, he'd get upset at the teachers who were there just to go surfing or, you know, things like that. But I feel like I was very blessed to have some teachers who were there because they cared and they wanted to do their best. And yeah, it probably wasn't the best that it could have been. But some of my teachers in high school who taught me science, I went into the sciences in Walla Walla. So some of the teachers who taught me science subjects in high school were from Walla Walla, and they honestly kind of modeled their classes to the same way that the professors at Walla Walla were doing. And I feel like that helped me a lot when I came to college. So I don't know. I guess there's, you know, positives and negatives to that. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what interests me as you say that, is it sounds like, just from your tone, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you felt like when you look back, it feels like you had an overall positive experience from being there on Ponet Bay, getting your Adventist education. Like you have good memories. You feel like it was enough to prepare you and interest you in what you wanted to do in life when it came to purpose. Is that fair?
Yes. I would say so. And I think it really depends on, like I said, the teachers. My parents were pushing my brother and I to, you know, really, you know, you have to leave the island. Not a lot of people do. You have to leave the island. You got to go get an education. You got to go get a good job. And that's not the mentality there. I think, I think I was blessed in a very unique position with, you know, the circumstances that I was in.
Yeah. That is interesting. Maybe my last point before I move on after Ponet Bay and getting to Walla Walla eventually in college. When you look at that also, does it feel like there's anything from that setting specifically that you'd pull and say, okay, now that you're, you know, in the States, you're in a part of Adventist education where like you need to have some level of a degree, right? That's, you're not going to hire literal college students to be your staff or work, you know, that would not be, that would be frowned upon if even legal, barely legal to do in any, Adventist school here in North America. That just doesn't happen. That's not a mission experience, right? Is there anything from that experience or the vibe or the way that you experienced Adventist education there that you wish could happen more here that you might think we're lacking, we're missing from that experience?
That's a good question. I feel like, I think I've said it before, I think it just depends on the individual. And maybe it was deeper than that. I don't know. You know, maybe it was the leadership at the school in Pompeii who were, you know, they were really encouraging and driving the teachers to be very intentional in how they, you know, went about teaching us and how, you know, what example they set for us. It was, you know, I was a campus kid. I lived on campus. So I was around these teachers all the time. So it wasn't just like it was their job and then they, you know, went home. They did go home, but I was, you know, around and they led by example. You know, it was, their life was mission minded that whole year and, you know, hopefully after that. And it was just a lifestyle. And I don't know if a lot of people here take it that seriously because, you know, I think when you're out there as a student missionary, you know that people are looking at you and looking to you, you know, just in your everyday life, not only at work. And I think that, you know, teachers here need to do that too. It's a lifestyle and you got to lead by example. And that's a lesson that I'm learning too. There's things that my school, my very conservative school, doesn't allow, like, I don't know, like wearing nail polish or jewelry or things like that. And, you know, so I have to learn, well, I have to lead by example in a lot of these areas. And if I want to be teaching my students, this is the kind of person I want you to be, then I also have to be upholding that expectation for myself.
I guess high school Anthony couldn't have been at that school because he was wearing lots of nail polish during the angsty teen years.
You wouldn't catch me dead without my black nail polish, Judel.
That emo kid, trouble.
The emo era. Yeah, you caught the tail end as I was coming to Walla Walla. That's true.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But I hear what you're saying. You're saying that growing up in that environment, what you experienced was a lot of teachers who teaching was like missional for them and it was a whole lifestyle that they lived. And it sounds like you kind of internalized that. So now when you're a principal now and a teacher now, now you kind of feel like that same ethos that was modeled for you. Like, wow, I have to live this out as a lifestyle, not just like a list of things, you know, in a handbook, but I actually have to live if I want to lead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we spent a bit of time kind of looking into, you know, that upbringing. I think it's unique what you have to share. And I think some people might look at the Adventist world outside of the U.S. and feel like it's this different beast, no pun intended. There's a lot of beast imagery in Adventism, but there's a view. And we've actually had people ask us to have people on that are more from a global perspective. I know that for us, that's sometimes a struggle because we don't, this is our experience of Adventism is a lot of the people we know to contact, to have discussions with, were from around, you know, our area. But I think it's great having you on just because you, although you did come over for college, you spent a large chunk of your life in that mission field, in that experience somewhere else outside the US, experiencing not just in the school system, but just church. What Adventism to you may have felt different. And that could be probably a whole other topic, honestly, with you just talking about your experience in Adventism before Walla Walla and then coming to Walla Walla. Man, I'm very tempted to go into that, but I know that that would take a long time just on its own.
I feel like we have to at least ask like a single thing. Like,
yeah, Judel, you do like, it, Anthony. Anthony, find a way to do it in 5 minutes or less, and I'll let you do it. Because I agree. I'm very tempted to go down that road a little bit.
Well, maybe the question, Judel, is like, you didn't grow up in the U.S. for your formative years, right? And then you moved here later, and so you, I'm imagining you experienced kind of two different Adventisms. I don't want to project that onto you, but you tell me if that's correct.
Oh,
and I'm curious what that was like.
Oh, I 100% did. And it was a weird culture shock in a lot of ways.
Tell us.
I mentioned a little bit that my parents, well, I was born in Sri Lanka. So that was like a thing all on its own. The culture in Sri Lanka is so different. And then we have Ponape, which is where I grew up. And then I moved, you know, to Walla Walla. There's so many ways in which all of those things clash. A big thing for me, I think, and I had to, you know, work through this personally, was the Sabbath. The Sabbath is regarded in, you know, very different ways in all three of these cultures. And I just remember this, I have this memory in my mind where I, you know, as I mentioned, I grew up on the campus. And so the student missionaries one day, one Sabbath, were just throwing around a football. And my dad was livid that they were doing this because you don't do that on the Sabbath, you know, in that culture, in the Sri Lankan and even the Ponapean culture, you don't do that. And I remember, you know, moving to Walla Walla and going to like Rooks Park or Pioneer Park or something like that and seeing people, you know, kick around a soccer ball or throw in a Frisbee. And I was like,
just involved in blatant debauchery all the time.
Debauchery. Oh, man.
Who are these hooligans? Yeah.
No, but it was a big culture shock. And yeah, I feel like there's other pieces here and there, like dancing. Dancing culturally is like, you know, a huge part of the culture in Ponape, a huge part of the culture in Sri Lanka, but it's a big no-no here.
Interesting.
You know, like if you even mention dancing, you know, people are like, oh my goodness. But yeah, it was weird and it was, you know, hard to adjust to those things, but I feel like I had to do, like I said, a lot of self-work to figure out where the happy medium was for me personally, because you have you know, the whole background and then you have the current setting of the culture here. So yeah, it was a little bit of a culture shock.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that, Judel, is you were on a very different life path than us in that those experiences. But at the same time, that journey that you just described at the end of figuring out, you know, where you're at, when you look at your two experiences, like finding in the middle where you're at, you know, what do I take from both sides that's valuable? That we can relate to because we experienced the same, right? When we grew up Adventist, there might have been some different, you know, some of those relatable. I think sports I can definitely relate to a certain degree. At least in my context, I usually saw it as you couldn't play competitive sports on Sabbath, but say you're at a park, throwing a Frisbee or a baseball or a football was okay. It just couldn't be an organized game. There was some sort of threshold there. Of if you're in an official game with an ump or a ref, you know, or a uniform on, you've sinned and broken the Sabbath. Evil. But if you're wearing flip flops at the park and playing the same exact game, it is okay in God's eyes, which that is probably its own bad explanations episode, Anthony, that we'll have to talk about at some point.
We'll have to,
but what I'm saying is, Judel, we had the same experience of we had to a certain point, deconstruct our Adventism, figure out what were valuable foundations, and some of it stayed, some of it from our, that maybe we rejected at some point. Now we circle back around and say, you know what, there is some value here. And then also saying, but also the new pieces that I'm getting as I get older, I experience a new culture. There are some valuable things there too, to balance out what I see my faith looking like when it comes to expressing that. So I think that's relatable to a lot of people. So we spent a lot of time, Anthony, kind of talking with Judel about college already, the Circle Church experience. But I have to at least mention Paul for a second. Your last name is Judel McCormick. We knew you as Judel Johnson. We've known you for a while, but I've known Paul an obscene amount of time. And I say obscene because our friendship is obscene. Really, it's bad at all of us. But I've known Paul since about third grade, second grade, somewhere early off.
Wow.
There's a picture of us from, you know, as long as history goes back, there's a picture of us doing these iconic poses. And we took the same pose through the years.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, I love it.
It goes way back. But I have to shout out Paul, your husband. Paul, if you're listening.
We have love for Paul.
We'll send you some stuff because we have a special group thread with me and Paul and Anthony and Jesse and Eric. It's a very special, sacred thread that we've had for over a decade.
I don't know if you can call it sacred.
We call it, for those listening, there's this thing that we literally call the garbage thread. And we share the best and brightest of the internet content to each other there. And we have for literally decades at this point.
Yeah.
I miss the good times. I really do. I miss both you and your husband and all the good times we had throughout the years. So I'm just this old man sitting back here reminiscing about the fun times.
It is.
They were fun times.
We should ask you, Judell, you know, kind of about your experience, you know, because we're in the series about education and we're curious for you as an Adventist principal of a small school. We know that Sean had compiled some statistics here. We know that over 60% of NAD SDA schools are small, which is defined as 2 to 3 teachers with multi-grade classrooms. And you work at such a school. And so we're just curious, what is it like, I guess, first of all, just in an overall sense, like being a principal at a small school? Do you find like you're doing everything? You're scrubbing the toilets and grading papers and, you know, sending report cards or, you know, what has been your experience like?
It is. Yeah, it's kind of like you described just there. It is kind of everything. As I was thinking about this, I was like, I have 2 full time jobs. I think I have the teacher job and I have the principal job. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, oh my goodness, there's so many other hats as well there. We don't have a secretary because it is a small school. So I am, you know, answering phone calls. I have the, you know, the main line directed to my actual cell phone. So I'm the secretary. File the paperwork, make the copies. Thankfully, we have a janitor, so I don't have to scrub the toilets.
Yeah.
But, you know, restocking supplies and, you know, buying, you know, playground equipment or things like that, principal stuff, visioning, you know, for the school and making sure everything's running smoothly and personnel issues or disciplinary issues. And then, of course, teacher, you know, has a lot of things, too. If you're the, well, we have 2 teachers at our school. So if you're this one of the 2 adults in the room, you are also the nurse. You are the lunch lady. You're
is
the
that,
counselor.
Sorry to interrupt, Judell. Is that 2 teachers including you or 2 other ones?
2 including myself. Yeah, 2 including me.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it's I teach 5th through 8th grade and then the other teacher teaches 1st through 4th grade.
Wow.
Yeah. So
it's wild to me, Judell, it's wild to me that like that statistic, I didn't fully understand like, you know, I read somewhere a while back, just like 60 to 70% of all Adventist schools in North America are small schools. But then it defined that, like Anthony said, as 2 to 3 teachers. You're in that category. That's You've got 2 teachers at your school. That is the majority of Adventist education. Like, just let that sink in for a second. That is, I wouldn't say most people, because if you think of the numbers, like there's, I don't know, like if you take the total body of students, I don't know what the breakdown there is for like how many are in larger schools versus there, but at least in terms of pure buildings, like how many, you know, specific schools we have, 60% or more, I even heard someone say 70% is a small school, a multi-grade classroom. That is so wild to me because Anthony and I didn't grow up. Well, Anthony, I don't know if before Auburn, if you experienced a small school.
I did.
Have you?
I did, but my school, I guess, was a larger one compared to this because mine had 4 teachers total, I believe, instead of 2. So mine had 4 teachers. We had like 40 kids max.
Okay.
But still pretty small. That's still on this, you know, smaller, slightly larger, small school. But Yeah, I never had that full experience. You know, most of the schools I went to, you know, from kindergarten up were somewhat big. Like there was a teacher for every separate class. I never lived in the multi-grade space ever in my academic experience. So I never felt that.
Privileged, so that's, you know.
Very privileged, yes. You know, that brings me to the point of, is that actually a privilege? Do you think as a, you know, a teaching principal, and you described the many hats that you wear, do you feel that there's something unique or special about that small school experience?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for all the, you know, the work that it is, I think it's a really beautiful way to do education. And I think there's a reason that a lot of our schools are this way. Multi-grade, I feel like it has so many benefits. But the biggest one I can think of right now is that, you know, you have kids from multiple age levels and abilities and, you know, backgrounds and, you know, whatever, together in the same room. And they're more often than not learning from each other.
Yeah.
And they're learning how to interact with each other, which is just like what they're going to experience in real life. You're never going to be in a situation as an adult with everybody around you that's the same age. You're going to have to learn to work with people and understand people that are of different ages and abilities. And and so it's preparing them in the best way in that sense to be able to interact and do life and be, you know, good citizens that can contribute to society. And with such a small student body, I feel like they form these relationships and you see them over the years. I have a student now. I've been at this school for, this will be my sixth year that I'm starting there. Wow. I've had her since first grade and she'll be in sixth grade. And you form these relationships with these students, these bonds, and they form relationships and bonds with each other. And it's truly like a family. I mean, they bicker a lot like a family does too, like siblings. But they, you know, they learn about each other, you know, the best and the worst about each other. And it's such a beautiful atmosphere. I just, yeah, I love it. I feel like it's such a great way to do learning.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's negatives too. There's a lot that I could say about how it doesn't work, but that's what I love about teaching. And I've only ever taught in multi-grade schools and I didn't experience multi-grade education when I was younger, like you guys, or more like Sean, I guess it was just single grade all the way through. So this is such a great experience for me, I feel. And I really liked it.
Yeah. I think I would actually say there's some of the best potential for Avanus education happens in a small school and a multi-grade classroom. Maybe some of the disadvantages, and if you want to speak to some of them, would probably be, is if it's not set up intentionally, it can become chaos. Or it can, you know, it can be where the learning can lose its direction if a teacher isn't set up in a thoughtful, prepared way and expectations are clear about what a multi-grade classroom should look like. And that can happen both ways, where the students can kind of feel like, I don't know what to do here, I'm lost. And then at the same time, the teacher can feel that way, overwhelmed. There is a reality that teachers get burnt out fast. Now, I don't know if that's exclusive to small schools. I think that's just across the board, not even just in Avanus Education. You know, teachers, the burnout rate is so high, you know, to the point where I don't have the statistic in front of me, but a while back I had heard, you know, by year three of teaching, about half of teachers quit by year three. And that kind of seems to be the sweet spot, the turning point. Like if you can make it past year three, like you're probably in it. Like you're probably in it for a reason beyond just survival. A lot of people sometimes will, at least in the past, sometimes the reputation was someone would fall back on education as like a fallback. Oh, if it doesn't work out in this field, I'll just become a teacher. Kind of that reputation. And I kind of laugh at that because I just imagine, like, if you show up at a classroom thinking this is your fallback after not doing well in something else, like this is going to really suck for you. Like this is not somewhere to be if you don't really want to do it. And that's not to say that it's miserable all the time teaching. I don't want to paint it that way. Mm-hmm. But there is so much, like you described, Judel, that you couldn't just get trained for in college or with a degree. You know, you just, especially year one is just a trial by fire, whether you're a principal or a teacher, a small or big classroom or school, it is a lot of chaos learning how things can become sustainable and how to be a meaningful, impactful teacher. And so,
I feel like I want to ask you, Judel, like how do you, you mentioned this is your sixth year. What has kept you from burnout all these years in the game mm-hmm. and wearing all these multiple hats, doing all these things? Mm-hmm. You're the principal, but you're also the teacher. I'm sure the list of things that you're responsible for is long. What keeps you energized and excited? And
that's a good question. There's so many things that I could throw out buzzwords like self-care and you know, all right. of those things. And that is true. You know, I think you do have to take care of yourself. There's things that I've had to put in place, like, okay, I'm not going to answer a text or a call when I get home. Or, you know, I won't answer a parent at all on the weekends or, you know, things like that.
Is that hard to do? Do people ever get upset at you for having those boundaries?
I would say no, because I start off the year saying, these are my office hours. Don't expect me to respond outside of my office hours.
Nice.
Yeah, but so, I mean, but I had to learn that, you know, I didn't start off that way. I had a parent texting me at midnight my first year. And like, it wasn't just, I didn't have my phone on silent, apparently. So I woke up anyways. Yeah. It was like three texts at once. So anyways, these, mm-hmm. there are things that I've had to learn and put in place. And, you know, this last year, I tried really hard to not work on Sundays, which I know it's like, what, how do you do that? You have to manage your time really, really well. And I have to push myself to plan and do other things when I'm really tired at the end of the day, after teaching, you know, for a whole day to sit down and put aside time to lesson plan. So it's, you know, drawing a lot of boundaries, and you do get really, really, really exhausted. And I'm sure that's the experience of every teacher out there. By the time summer comes along, you're just kind of crawling. But what really helps, I think, is your support system too. You know, putting those boundaries in and having a good support system. A good spouse. Paul's amazing. He's a good teacher husband.
What a guy.
And very understanding.
What a guy.
Having a good supportive school board. I know I'm very uniquely blessed, I feel, to have a very good supportive school board who is, I feel like, 100% behind me and, you know, anything I want to do. And even a good church. We have a pretty good supportive church. The parents at the school, I've had, you know, minimal problems with parents and students. So that whole, you know, all those pieces put together, I feel, help with the experience. And then, of course, realizing this is what I really want to do, and keep reminding myself there's probably nothing else that I would rather be doing. So you know, this is what you love, and you have to remember that even on the bad days. And Paul helps me remember that. So that's good.
Yeah. That you mentioned too, like that is something very special, because I think a school, especially an Adventist school, lives and dies by that support group, that support system, just for you personally, but also for the school's health. Having a church, having a board, like people don't always see the behind the scenes stuff that goes into running and operating a school. It's not like the principal calls all the shots. Like there's a school board, that, you know, does a lot, you know, a school, an Adventist school, can't just, like, a conference can't come in as like this governmental system, at least in practice, well, in theory. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too far, but it's written and designed that a school is meant to be connected to a church, to the point where for a school, like, for instance, for a school to get shut down, you know, if there's a classic thing in Adventist education is if there's a struggle with enrollment or finances or something else. And unfortunately there's times where a school has to close, or there's a question of that. The responsibility actually lies with the church for that to officially take place. And I don't know if people always understand like how that process works or like how, you know, schools operate. Like, it involves a team, it involves a system of support to make things happen and to work things out. So it's not just a principal coming in and calling all the shots. There's a lot that goes into, you know, making Adventist schools work. And so that's a blessing that you have that experience, because many sometimes don't, or maybe it's kind of a mixed bag where there is some support, but then there's, you know, sometimes a rift. And we talked about this with Larry Blackmer, who was the former VP of education for the NAD. And how sometimes there is this kind of, like, there's this divide between churches and the pastor and maybe the church with a school system. And I don't know, as a principal, Judel, like, if there's ever an appeal or sometimes a thing where you go to a church asking for support or asking, because the reality is a church financially supports, you know, the school.
They
so
do,
your church supports the school financially. And I don't know, it sounds like your experience is positive overall with the, maybe the members and the people of that church, but you know, sometimes there's a bit of animosity or there's a bit of awkwardness or tension with tension. Hey, we're taking money from you guys to operate this, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know how it feels on your end as an educator to be on that receiving end.
I think that there can be, I think there can be some, you know, awkwardness among some church members, and there has been, you know, a little bit of that. Because our church, you know, is not doing the best, you know, financially.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm sure a lot of churches struggle as well. And sometimes, you know, the school board does feel bad, you know, asking for a certain subsidy, but it's kind of the church. That's what they're, you know, they've committed to doing, to supporting the school. But there can be some awkwardness sometimes. And there, you know, there has been a little bit, you know, here and there, where I've just kind of had to be like, you know, remind myself, it's just one or two people that are saying things or, you know, saying how we should be putting our money somewhere else, you know. And sometimes that is the view that some people have, you know, why are we doing this? And they don't understand necessarily the mission of the school or even the church by helping the school. And it does get discouraging sometimes. It really does. And like I said, I have to remind myself, it's just a few people who believe that. And that is the impression that I get. It's most of the people and, you know, the congregation at large, they are really supportive and they believe in the school's mission. And, you know, sometimes we have school programs where church members will just show up to support the students and they have no connection whatsoever with the students. Our school is actually mostly non-Adventist. We have, we have about 20, we might have like 23 students this coming year, and two of them attend our church. So the rest of them are community members. So most, like I said, most of the church members truly believe in the school as a mission, you know, for the church. And they're like, we will put everything behind this. And we do get wonderful support just in terms of, you know, monetary support or even people wanting to volunteer or people just showing up, like I said, at events. It's just very rarely we will get the occasional person who is
That's interesting.
There you go, Sean.
I was just going to say really quick, that's fascinating to me. I didn't realize that your school was vast majority non-Adventist.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And that, you know, we grew up going to school with people that weren't Adventist, but I guess in my context, I remember, again, for grade school, high school, majority or probably at least half. I don't know if I was keeping track, but it felt like most people were Adventist or in that circle to some point. And it's in the past, it's interesting to me as I've had discussions with other schools that have a high percentage of non-Adventists. Sometimes that's been a point of criticism for the school of not being Adventist enough. Mm-hmm. And I've always found that strange to me personally, because of what you just said, is that the potential for mission, right? To share what's valuable about this system, about this belief and mm-hmm. faith culture and Adventism, the potential is so ripe, right? For people to see what it is, not just for the students, but sometimes the families, the parents, the others around to see, you know, what things are like. But it's interesting at times that people criticize. I'm curious, has that ever come up? I'm wondering, has that ever even been a thing for your, it sounds like the church is excited that so many are not Adventist to be a mission field, but it
sounds super supportive.
Yeah. Is there ever a criticism that it's not Adventist enough?
It's not anything that I feel like has been vocalized to me, but it can be. I have wondered, I guess, because there are some children in the church who don't attend the school, you know, and they're being homeschooled.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, and
right.
You know, as we talk to the parents, we've committed to homeschooling them. But I've heard, you know, kind of not in this church, but in other areas. Yeah, we had to pull our children from that school because there were too many non-Adventists in that school. And I guess I understand, you know, parents not wanting their children to be around children who might be quote unquote bad influences.
Like influence.
But, I just feel like you said, Sean, the potential for the mission aspect of that is just so much greater than that fear, in my opinion. And it's sad that that's a thought.
Well, and there's two things there. The point that you just made was it's a value for the school system, right? For the church to support that to happen and for you as teachers to embrace that demographic of non-Adventists. But I would actually respond to the parents that are maybe fearful of that bad influence, is there's such a potential there for it being a blessing, because to get out of that Adventist echo chamber to experience other people's thoughts. And of course, like you are still an Adventist school. The teachers have to be Adventist. The identity and ethos of what your mission is, that's not different here, right? Your school is rooted in leaders, you and your other teacher, about what this school is about. So when those bad things happen, when something does happen with a student that says this or does that, you're still going to come back to what the school is about. You're going to course correct as those students make those choices. And so in fact, that gives the Adventist students an even greater opportunity to understand, what is it that I believe? And in some ways, I envy
when the bad
that experience.
Kid brings their Pokemon cards to school.
Well, I mean, we did that in Adventism too. I mean, we just hit it really well.
Yeah, I definitely did.
I got mine thrown away, and I've talked about that before, Anthony.
Wow.
But I want to say, though, like, I envy that, really, because my wife, Rochelle, she went to a Christian school, but she was one of two Adventists at the school, and it was a larger Christian school. And she said that was a great experience because, she grew up in a family that was very rooted in belief and knowing her faith and owning it. And that led to Bible studies with her teachers and her fellow classmates that led to, like, hey, what is it that you believe? And that pushed her to really think about, what is it that makes me an Adventist? And that's not a question that came up for me years later, past she did, because she went to a school that wasn't surrounded by Adventist students. So I actually think, you know, my answer to a parent would be that it's going to be a great opportunity. You know, it's got its own challenges, but there's also so much potential for your child to learn what it means from these great teachers and from this school and from these other kids that might push back a bit. Like, what does it mean that you're an Adventist? What is that weird stuff you do?
Yeah.
So, Anthony, I cut you off. Anthony, I cut you off. You had something to share.
Yeah, Judel, you know, you kind of alluded to it just now when you were talking about like the mission of the school. And I guess I was curious because we've been asking all of our guests in this series about what do they believe about the goal of Adventist education? Like what's the goal, the mission, the end product that is being produced? And I guess I was curious, in your words, what would you say is the goal of Adventist education to you?
I think that we are teaching for eternity. I always like to say I would love to see my students in heaven. I think that's the end goal. I think, you know, we can equip them to be the best they can be, the best contributing members they can be on earth. But I would like, the end goal is heaven. You know, that's where we want to see them. And I hope that, you know, everything that we teach them here in this school will, you know, allow them to be able to experience that. And yeah, I want to see them in heaven.
Yeah. That's a very simple answer, Sean. I think that's been the most clear.
To the point.
Not in a negative way, Judel. The most clear and simple. Like, others have, you know, given us paragraphs and intellectual whatever, but.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's so much behind it too, I feel, but I think that's the ultimate goal for me.
That's one of the good things about you teach in elementary, you know, your junior high. I taught 5 through 8 last year. I know that crowd very well. And if you can't say it in 5 seconds or less, you've lost them.
They're gone.
And that humbles you in such a deep and profound way, because times you look at your kids and they don't have a filter. You can see on their faces when you're the most boring thing they've ever seen on planet Earth. You're like a loser to them. You're like, they're watching paint dry.
If Jesse were here, Sean, he would say, that's you every day, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there it is. There it is. Thank you, Anthony, for channeling
my inner Jesse.
Yeah, the spirit of Jesse haunts me every day of my life.
I'm not usually that. That's not usually me. What has he done to me?
Why did you do that? You stooped so low.
Usually I'm on Sean's side. I don't know what
happened. He's definitely paying you behind the scenes after that. No, but really, I think there is something.
Only baseball is boring. You're not.
There it is. There it is. Yeah. How's Canada doing the Olympics right now, by the way, Anthony? Is it doing okay?
Not very good.
Is it doing okay?
Oh, wow.
We're literally recording this at the tail end of the Paris Olympics.
Right.
So we just dated this recording a little bit.
Yeah. There you go.
But I think but it is something powerful. Like you say, like just that emphasis on heaven, that's a big part of the, a push for what Adventism is about, is this greater, you know, picture, this grander picture of the great controversy leading us towards, you know, why did Jesus do all this? Like he's gonna bring everything into communion, into harmony through getting us again, right? The Advent part of Seventh-day Adventist.
Yeah.
And I think that emphasis is so unique in Adventist education, right? There, it's not that we take away from like the need for being good citizens here and doing everything to be the kingdom of heaven on earth now, but it gives hope for the future. And we emphasize that in such an intense and focused way in our church that I think is so rich and valuable when done in a healthy way. Right. When that end time, you know, eschatology is a beautiful picture of God. It's exciting. We can fill kids and others with hope about reuniting with loved ones and knowing it's just beyond the 80 years you get to live here. Like your life and the skills and development that's happening in your brain now is not just a small blip in time. Like this is going to be for something so much bigger and grander. And it just, when a kid gets it right, they sometimes struggle to pay attention or to get a lesson that you have taught over and over again. But when you see that seed planted, when you see they grow, it's one of the most beautiful experiences as a teacher you know, how the spirit can work through, through Adventist education. So
true.
I
want to ask you about that, Judel, because as a pastor, I've learned, specifically as a youth pastor, and now I've moved on to young adults, but similar age groups in that, like a little more with high school for me, you're kind of all most of your ministry is just planting seeds, and a lot of times you don't get to see the fruition of it. You don't get to see the fruit of what you're planting. All you see is like, okay, I'm just planting. I'm kind of planting in the dark, planting in the dark. But for you, do you feel like you described it as the mission of Adventist Education as educating for eternity, for something bigger, for something grander, that we're a part of, you know, the God story. Do you feel like you ever get to see the fruition of that? Are there those moments where, you know, a kid will get it and you're like, oh, you know, they're getting it? Or, you know, is it all just shooting in the dark? Because I get that too. So sometimes as a pastor, I'm like, man, does anything I'm saying matter? So I guess I'm curious for you, what's your experience been?
It's interesting because with teaching so many non-Adventist students, I'm always wondering, is what they learn here going to stick with them? And I hope it does. Mm. I hope it does. A lot of, you know, the change, I feel like for an individual, happens when they're young. I think I read somewhere that the decisions they make when they're young are more likely to stick, you know, when they're older. So I truly believe in planting those seeds. And I think, you know, that they will come to fruition one day. And it is rare, you know, to see those immediate changes. Yeah. But I do have a student who came to me when he was in fifth grade, and he just graduated from eighth grade. And when he came to me, he was coming from a public school, and he had a lot of behavioral issues, and he, you know, just bad habits that he had picked up from public school and, you know, other places. And I had him for, 4 years? And he is a completely different kid. When he graduated eighth grade just this last year, he is a completely different kid. He is considerate and kind, and he reads his Bible willingly by choice. You know, some of his favorite songs are Christian songs. He still has his quirks, and he has some, you know, things that he has to overcome. Mm-hmm. And not everything has, you know, gotten 100% better. But I'm just so proud, you know, when I think of that kid and I think of the journey, and I think of, okay, well, maybe he didn't convert to Adventism, but his life changed for sure.
Yeah.
By being at our school and being around these students and the teachers that care about him. And that seeping into the home life, and, you know, me having to talk to his parents probably every day when I first had him about, you know, certain behaviors or how we can help him, or, you know, let's look at it this way, you know, what would help him remember to do his homework. You know, I just all of these things, I feel like I can at least say, okay, you know, there's a little bit of change at least there. And hopefully those seeds that I plant, you know, eventually they will take root. But seeing those things like that is just, it gives me such, you know, assurance in what we're doing here in Adventist education. It matters.
Yeah, I really love that you shared that, Judel, because one of the main questions that was on our mind when we started this series was, does Adventist education actually produce Adventists? And is that the goal of Adventist education? And should it be the goal of Adventist education just to kind of, you know, it's a big factory and we're just making, you know, putting the stamp on the, you know, the whatever it is as it comes down the assembly line? Is that really the goal? And what I hear you saying is it's kind of bigger than that, is that it's not necessarily putting the brand name on, or I don't know why, like... branding someone with the Adventist logo came to mind. That's really dark.
On the forehead, it's got to be
on the forehead and on the hand.
The seal of God.
The seal of God. Right there. Oh no!
Yes,
we're all gonna get fired. I think maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
It would have happened by now, Judel. Judel, there's probably a thousand things that.
Oh yeah,
it's all good. We've got immunity.
Right. But yeah, you know.
No.
Tenure. We've got tenure.
Tenure. Oh, I don't know if I have tenure yet at my current job.
I don't have tenure yet.
I just finished week one or year one today. So I.
Oh, well.
But all this to say, thank you. All this to say, it seems like what you're saying is that it's actually bigger. That there's like, if a kid who comes through the school, if their life has changed in some significant way, you feel like you've succeeded. Is that accurate?
I feel like I have, yeah. And I've struggled with that question, you know, should they be Adventists when they leave? Or is that the end goal? Do we want to convert everybody into Adventism? And I had some really good talks with our pastor about this too. I feel like it's a bigger question than I even have answers for, because I feel like I'm still searching for those answers.
Yeah.
But I think if we can lead them to Jesus, and if their lives are changed as a result, then I think there is some success in that. And maybe that is the goal. And maybe that has to be enough.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think having at least a grasp, and I think I appreciate you being honest about that, Judel, is sometimes it can feel like in Adventism, not just with teachers, but pastors or leaders, like we have everything figured out for what our mission is. And sometimes there's that expectation, like, you know, you have your mission statement as a school year. At our school, it's the SLOWs, it's teacher jargon for our student learner outcomes, you know, the SLOWs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, each Avis school might have like clear bullet point kind of things that go in the student handbook and stuff. And you have those clear missions there. And those are valuable as kind of like a starting point. But a lot of times, you know, being able to admit like, hey, we're on this journey together to figure out alongside, you know, each other, what this is supposed to look like. And there needs to be a sense of humility, knowing like God's got this. Like if we're listening to God, and if this is really of him, like this school, this church is really of him, like he's going to take it where it needs to. And I'm just a vessel, right? Like you can do all the training and whatever, but when it comes down to it, like if it's of God, like he's going to lead in both maybe some expected ways, but a lot of times in unexpected ways and unexpected outcomes for what that's going to look like. And I think that is sustainable in Adventist education. I think where we've lost teachers or we've lost a vision in church is when there isn't that room for God to move in a way that may be unexpected.
And that's what I hear you saying, Judel, is leaving room for God to do what he wants.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like there's so much beauty in that too. You don't have to take on the burden of, you know, all of the work on your own. And it shouldn't be, you know, God should be working in their lives. And you shouldn't have to take all of that on when we can't. There's no way we can do it on our own. It's, you know, we have to leave it up to God. And there's so much beauty and reassurance in that, because sometimes it's just like, I can't do everything and I just have to let God take it over. Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus. Yep. There's seasons where it can be discouraging, or you're just like, I don't know what's going to happen from all of this. And when you're working so hard, right, as the teaching principal, I know you are.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
It's so exhausting. It can be so emotionally and physically crippling, you know? And again, it's not to discourage people from being teachers, but at the same time, like it's not a joke, like how much heart and soul goes into education.
Judel has such the demeanor of kindness and peace about her. Yeah. But I just know there are times in your week where you're just like, why did I do this in my life?
I'm done. So done. Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe there's not. I don't want to project that on you, but I'm sure there's moments where you're exhausted.
There's times in the year where I'm like, I'm not signing my contract again. This is not
right.
I'm not coming back.
And I think but I think you have to have those moments, right, Judel? Like if you can't be honest about where you're at, like when it's just miserable, you know, like it's like you're not always excited. You don't show up to school every day just so excited. Like there are like in any career, like there are days and hills and valleys that are just, you know, it's a slog, it's a trudge through. yeah. you know, this valley of despair a little bit, but that's part of it. It's that mix of, again, like you were talking about, this reliance upon God. He's bigger than the situation. And that there's an expectation like, hey, this is going to be an up and down roller coaster. That's just part of life. And having that expectation, knowing, you know, I can trust in God. I can rely upon him as I go through this year. You've been an example of that, right? Like that's, you're in the thick of it as a teaching principal at a small school. And I'm just curious, like, as we kind of close and stuff, I know that there'll be people listening that are teachers or maybe interested in going into Adventist education. Is there something that, like, is there a message you would say to someone like that, that's in Adventist education? You know, I don't know exactly when this will come out, Anthony, but you know, some point, you know, this year, where it's probably at the start of the school year, maybe, maybe a few months after, who knows, but you know, we're kind of getting to that school season. You know, people are starting to go get school supplies. I was already getting my son Olin his school supplies for kindergarten. It's kind of hitting me like I have to go back to work very soon.
Yeah.
Which is a mix of excitement and like, oh no, summer break's over. But like when you look at all that, like what would be like something you'd share with teachers and others wondering.
We should frame it in like what we were saying before, like 60% of NAD schools are like Judel, like your school. So what, I guess, if you had a word, it doesn't have to be like cliche word of encouragement, but I guess what would your word to other teachers just like you be?
Oh man. I feel like you have to know why you're doing it. It's such a buzzword in education right now, but know your why. And I feel like it's more than that. You know, it's not just, well, I love teaching, which should be, you know, why you're going into education, because it is difficult, like we've mentioned, and it can be discouraging sometimes, you know. But on the plus side, there's so many beautiful moments too. And those beautiful moments usually outweigh those discouraging ones. And I think that's what keeps you in it. And then just from the Adventist education perspective, it's not just knowing that you want to be a teacher, but it's also knowing that you are being Jesus to these kids. You are showing them what Jesus is like and who he is and how we should act. Because that's how he acted and how he led his life. And it's a big responsibility, but when you look at it from that perspective, it's just exciting to be a part of someone's life like that. It's a huge responsibility and it's a big impact, but it's so beautifully worth it. And like I said, those moments when they do come, and they do come a lot, you see a kid's face just light up, or you witness a kid being kind to somebody else and they're not getting anything, you know, they're not gaining anything from it. They're just doing it to be nice and to be kind and to be like Jesus. You're like, that's worth it. Just that in of itself is worth it. So,
Wow. Beautiful.
That's a good way to finish. I don't think we could say it better, Anthony. That's the one right there. Yeah.
We're just going to ruin it if we keep talking.
Yeah. No, Judel, that's always true, no matter where we're at in the conversation, anytime we open our mouths. But a little less so because Jesse and Eric aren't here. So they missed out on a great conversation with Judel.
If they were here, Judel, I feel like they could have ruined it. Yeah, they would have.
They would have. This is only good because it's the three of us right now.
Yes.
Judel, again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your honest experiences. So much prayer and power to you as you start getting ready for your school year. As we're recording this, it's getting ready for that. I know there's so much that goes into that, that, you know, most people don't see. They don't see all the hats. They don't see all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, you are not paid for the amount of hours you labor, over those kids. And, from one teacher to another and to all the other people listening that are going into education and doing that journey, that 10-month journey, we appreciate you, and we know that you're making a difference. This matters, And so we hope that you're encouraged right now listening to this story. So yeah, Judel, thank you. And for those that want to check out the Paulsbo Adventist School, if you're in the Northwest area, go check out that school. That's where you got to be.
Has a great principal.
Yes, it's got, I mean, you got to go. So Judel, I know they can find you wherever. I mean, they can check out the website of the school. And, I'm sure you're on social media as well. So
yeah,
check out Paulsbo Adventist, you guys. And I think that's it, Judel. Unless you have any final, I think you already said the final words. You tell Paul that we miss him.
I will.
I don't want to be nice, but I do really miss. I miss both of you a lot. So,
We miss you too.
We should get together sometime.
Same, Judel.
We should. Yes. Thank you for having me. I am really proud of what you guys are doing with your podcast, and I've enjoyed following you. So, thank you. It's been an honor.
Thanks, Judel.
An honor coming from you, Judel, because we all know that Circle wouldn't have happened without you, and it's a miracle that this happens without you.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, friends. You've just been listening to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter, and on behalf of all the guys, we just want to say a big thank you to all of you who have come alongside us in our journey to have honest conversations about Adventism. We appreciate each one of you. As usual, if you haven't already, give us a follow on Instagram. It is kind of like our home base, social media-wise, and if you'd like to stay up to date on the episodes that we're posting or just different things that we're doing, you can follow us there. We're also kind of like low-key a meme account, and we post silly videos and other stuff, so give us a follow. We would love it. Also want to say a big thank you to our patrons, and we're really grateful to each one of you for helping us make quality content. So to each one of you, a big thank you. And if you'd like to follow us on Patreon, you can. There's a link in our Instagram bio if you'd like to support us. Thank you so much. Last but not least, if you could you leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you listen, because it really helps us actually in the algorithm to help new people get their eyes on the podcast. So if you could just go in, give us a little, hopefully a 5-star review, but you know, be honest, that really helps us, just in the algorithm, the way that, you know, these things work these days. So we really, really appreciate it. All right. I think that's it for now, friends. So we will see you next time on Seeking What They Sell.